Blog Talk Radio.
It's 8 p.m. in London, 3 o'clock in New York, 2 p.m. in Texas, and noon in Los Angeles. You're listening to Radio Stranahan.
Lee Stranahan, thank you. It was a privilege for me to meet you last weekend.
You're tuned into
Radio Stranahan.
And now, here's your presenter, Lee Stranahan.
Good afternoon, everybody. Lee Stranahan. Thursday, if you're listening to Radio Stranahan, you look lovely. I'm just going to give you a technical warning up front. I'm trying this once again with my microphone. I've had these technical problems before with Blog Talk Radio. I'm just going to get this out of the way up front. And I'm going to tell you, at any point, the show could magically go into silence. And if it does, if that does happen, just hang out a minute and I will call back into the show. What happens is, if I lose an internet connection or something like that, the show goes silent, I get a notice, and then I have to call back into the show. And then I have a panicked minute. And it is a panicked minute, too. It really is. Then I have a panic minute where I have to call back into the show, and that process takes a minute, minute and a half. So if the show suddenly goes silent, no, it's not the Russians. It's not the Obama administration. It's just the damn internet. That's all. That's all it is. This is Lee Stranahan, America's finest reporter, once again, making you smarter every day. And by the way, we've got a great guest this hour, my friend Christina Batteri. Will be calling in today's show, and I will be talking to Christina about the news of the day. But I thought I would start with this Chicago torture story that I saw breaking last night. And in particular, I want to try to have a rational discussion about the problems I have with the way the story has been promoted by people on the right, and in particular, Mike Cernovich. And I want to talk about that because I think it's something that needs to be talked about. Now, let me get some stuff out of the way up front. I like Mike. So that's important to know. This is not a bash fest where I'm going to bash Mike Cernovich. If you're not familiar with Mike, Mike is a author. He wrote a book called Guerrilla Mindset. He was all over Twitter during the election. And I've said this before, I understand what Mike is doing. I get it. He's combining two things, politics and what I will call the self-help space. And I don't mean that in any negative or derogatory way. I own his book, Guerrilla Mindset. I paid for it because I have a lot of books and it's along the lines of stuff I'm interested in. And the book is actually interesting. If you think you know what the book is about, a lot of the book, especially early on, he's talking about stuff like mindfulness, a very Zen-like concept, which I agree with, by the way. I agree with the concept of mindfulness. And so that's a lot of what he talked about. And so Mike was able to build up a big Twitter following during the election. A big Periscope following. Really, Mike, he's got a website, and it does, you know, well for a personal blog. Let me look it up. Let me look up what I mean by well. I'm just going to look it up here. Hang on one second. I'll find it. So I'll give his website. His website is Danger and Plague. .com. His website is ranked 21,000th in the United States. Yeah, that's his website. So according to Alexa, it's ranked number 21,000 in the United States. And it spiked quite a bit. It was 60,000. Now, my comparison, for instance, this isn't a fair comparison. Let me do one that I think is a fair comparison. Gateway pundit, Jim Hofsite. Oops, I misspelled it. One second.
Hey, Dad.
What's that, Jay?
You just went off.
Okay, you get a call back in. It's right here. Are you sure? Wait, my son is telling me I just went off. I'm going to keep talking as though I'm still on. But I hate these things. I got to go back to using the phone. I hate using the phone, too. I don't like having a phone up against my head. I'm funny like that. I am funny like that. I'll keep talking. Shane is now dialing in.
You're good.
What?
You're on.
I'm on?
It's working.
What's that?
You're working. It's working.
Okay. Boy, again, I apologize for the technical problems. I'd apologize more profusely if I think I did anything to cause them. But thankfully, I don't. I don't think I did anything to cause them. It's just the problems of Blog Talk Radio, which is a format that I like quite a bit. But, boy. So, for instance, the Gateway Pundit, Jim Hofsite, the Gateway Pundit, his USA rank is 2,000. So Mike's is 21,000, Gateway Pundits is 2,000. Breitbart News, where I'm the lead investigative reporter. I don't know if you looked this up lately. I haven't looked it up lately. Let me see. Breitbart News, number 46. Okay. CNN is number 22. That gives you some idea. Now, one of the things that Mike says is he often says that his platform is bigger than mainstream media. That's just not true. It's just not true. He has a bunch of followers. He's got a good following on Twitter. 200,000. I'm not looking at his Twitter feed right now. He's got a couple hundred thousand, I guess. But CNN, let's just compare. Just even on Twitter following, let's just go right from there. Should be easy. There we go. CNN has 30 million followers. Okay? So, Mike tends to exaggerate the reach he has. And that's fine. By the way, if I were to compare Stranahan, which I don't post on, I haven't posted on Stranahan for a long time, I'm sure it's gazillion. I'm sure Mike's traffic right now is a lot bigger than Stranahan's is. And again, that's not my main platform, but okay. Here, I'll look it up. Stranahan.com. I'll bet it's really lucky. Yeah, there we go. Literally 11 million. There we go. But I don't post on there. So I guess 11 million is okay. I'm feeling good about 11 million at that point. But I have big platforms that I use, right? And Breitbart is number 45 site or whatever I said it was, 44. In the country, that's a pretty big platform. And before that, I wrote the Huffington Post, which is also a very big platform. So Mike does have a big platform compared to lots of people on Twitter. He's got a bigger following than I do on Twitter, like quite a bit, but he's got less than, let's say, Milo, when Milo was still on Twitter. He's got a lot less than CNN. He's got less than New York Times, less than the Washington Post, less than the mainstream media, less than Breitbart, right? I'm pretty sure. I haven't checked, but I'd be kind of shocked. I don't pay that much, you know, it's one of those things I don't pay that much attention to. And, of course, Breitbart is also on Facebook, where it's got a huge presence. And, again, that's not a platform that Mike uses. Yeah, so Breitbart News has 500,000 followers, right? And so the point here is not to put down Mike. I'm not putting down Mike because he's got 185,000 followers. So Breitbart's got a little under half, a quarter, something like that. So I'm not knocking Mike. He's got a good presence. He's built up a good presence. And he's built up a good presence. This is what I say. I like Mike. He's built up that presence by, in many cases, educating people. If you watch his periscopes, in a lot of cases, he's going through and telling people stuff that I guess a lot of people don't know. I went on one of his periscopes one time. He's reading the book Influence. So it's an important book. If you want to understand marketing, if you want to understand persuasion in any way, Influence is a good book. And it's a book I'm very familiar with. So when I saw Mike reading it, I'm like, oh, that's a good choice there. And so that's why I say, so I'll defend Mike in terms of that. He's got, and I'll say something else very positive about him. He deals with a lot of haters. He deals with a lot of people who just hate him. And sometimes when people hate you, it is based on nothing but envy and craziness. And a lot of the attacks that Mike gets are the same sort of unfair attacks that people on the right get all the time. But I like Mike, and I think he does good work often, but I have a problem with Mike Cernovich. I do have a problem with Mike. And I'll get to that after this very short break. Hang on, let's see. I'm just trying to find which break thing should I do. Well, let's try this one. Just take a short break. It's 11 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Radio Strata.
Radio Strata.
Are you tired of the mainstream media and you want to make a difference? Do you read the newspapers or watch TV and think that you can do better? This is Lee Stranahan, and that's why I started Citizen Journalism School. You can check it out at citizenjournalismschool.com, and you'll see why I created a place where you can learn to research, write, promote the stories, make a difference, and make a living doing it. I'd like you to go over to citizenjournalismschool.com right now and sign up for a free course I've got for you. It's called Build Your Media Empire. And the course takes you step by step online through the things you need to do to set up the platforms so you can share your voice and your stories. I'll show you how to set up material so you can do writing, podcasting, video. Best of all, it's absolutely free. Go to citizenjournalismschool.com and sign up right now.
Lee Stranahan, Radio Stranahan. Hey, by the way, if you want to call in on this topic or any other topic,
you're listening to Radio Stranahan. Call us.
Number to call in, 619-924-0786. That number again, 619-924-0786. Now, so here's a criticism of Mike Cernovich. That's what we're talking about right now. And particularly this Chicago torture story that happened. One of the techniques that Mike uses over and over again is taking credit. So what will happen is he will take credit for things that he's not justified in taking credit. I don't know how else to put it, but he's not justified in taking credit for. Now that's a technique. I assume, just because I know some of the stuff Mike has read, I assume he's read Robert Greene's book, The 42 Immutable Laws of Power. Robert Greene's a guy I interviewed years ago when I was writing for the Huffington Post. I talked to Robert a few times. I should get him on the show. He's an interesting guy. And the 42 Immutable Laws of Power is a great book. And one of the things they say, basically, it's a description of what you do if you want to become powerful. And one of the things that Robert got criticized for that's in the book is take credit for other people's achievements. And Robert defended that by saying, look, I'm not telling you to do that. I'm telling you what works. And he gave the example of Steve Jobs. He said Steve Jobs got credit for stuff at Apple that he didn't do. And by the way, that's true. However, Steve Jobs was also a genius, and he deserves credit for the vision behind Apple, right? So without going into a nerdy tangent on that, that's true. So taking credit for other people's accomplishments is a good way to get notoriety. And by the way, I could easily do, and I may at some point, I may do an episode talking about the impact that I think Milo's had. Milo Yiannopoulos, my colleague at Breitbart News, guy who I've interviewed, guy who I love. I love Milo. I like him personally. But I think there's some things that are worth talking about. And here's the other thing. Trump won the election, and so I think it's a good time to talk about these things and try to figure out what our values are. Okay, so Mike, one of the things he's been able to do is he's been able to take credit for things that aren't his to take credit for. And what he's been able to do, and this is how you do it, I'm going to explain the technique to you in detail. If you build up a decent Twitter following, and you can build to that by pandering to people, what you do is you find a topic that people, there's a caller on the line, I'll take you in just a second. What you do is you find a topic that people are interested in. I don't even mean pandering in a bad way. I'm trying to describe it. You find a topic that people are interested in, and then you get onto that topic. So you see a trend that's happening, and then you take credit for it. Now, specifically, Mike is taking credit. If you, you know, one of the, and I'll talk about this technique in a second, but he's saying that the hate crime charges were filed because of him. That's not true. It's just not true. He doesn't have any proof of that. But he's got a large enough Twitter following, and he's very good at including people in it and making them feel like, hey, we're all doing something together here, guys. We're all, you know, we're all in this together. We're making a difference. And so it would be as though if I got a big crowd of people together and I said, hey, I just realized the caller online, Christina. Hang on one second. I'll take it in a second. But imagine if I were to get a big group of people together and somehow convince them that I was responsible for the sun rising in the morning, and then I take credit for it. Well, here's the thing. The sun rises whether you did it or not. Donald Trump did not win the election because of Mike Cernovich. Period. In fact, Mike Cernovich is popular because of Donald Trump. I'll say that again. Donald Trump did not win the election because of Mike Cernovich or because of Milo. They gained popularity because they were on a wave that was bigger. Now, the guy I do give credit to is Steve Bannon. And I could go into a whole long thing about that, why I think Bannon gets credit. But Bannon had a platform that he had already built up, and he saw the wider implications of Donald Trump before he got in there. So that's one thing that I want to correct, and I want to correct it. But here's the thing. If you've got a large enough Twitter following and people who like you and people who like Mike Cernovich like him for, as I said, good reason. He's done stuff to educate them. He talks about persuasion. He's talked about these techniques. But he doesn't talk about the one I'm talking about, like take credit for other people's work. And that's in a book. Go read 42 Laws of Immutable Laws of Power by Robert Greene. You'll see it's right in there. So in other words, this is something you can learn to do if you want to manipulate people. And again, I'm not even saying manipulate in a bad way. So on the line right now is my friend Christina Viteri. Christina is one of the founding members of the Tea Party. And most importantly, the most important thing on Christina's resume is that she and I used to share an office together 26 years ago when we worked in marketing. Hey, Christina, how you doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Okay, now first off, let's just establish that you're lying. Let's just start with that.
Yeah, I'm a terrible liar.
You are. So I know it.
Yeah.
I know for a fact you're not actually feeling well. That was a test. Right?
Yeah. I sound worse than I feel, to be perfectly, you know, upfront with everybody. Full disclosure, I seem to have a cold or flu type thing. And anyway, the cold and flu meds seem to be working, but it doesn't help my voice right now. So I apologize to all the listeners that they have to suffer through the current state of my voice.
Your voice is gravelly, and that gives it a certain sexy quality of Brenda Vaccaro. Rod Stewart. I'll go with Rod Stewart. Sure. Let's try that.
Thank you.
It's excellent, I think. But
well, it is National Whipped Cream Day, so I'll just put that out there.
So, Christina, you and I So I mentioned that we shared an office, but you and I are old marketing buddies. And so
yep.
I thought one thing we could talk about is just this idea of how marketing plays a role in politics. Oh, hang on. I got to drink my tea. One sec. Ah, that's better. About how marketing plays a role in politics. And I know you were listening before. I think you were listening. You're on the line at least. Do you have any thoughts on the way the social media thing has borne out under Trump? Because again, my take on it is this, that I'm really not trying to denigrate anybody for being involved and active, right? But you were involved, you were there at the start of the Tea Party. You helped take a movement that frankly nobody saw coming and
mm-hmm.
turn it into a household name, right? That's just
yeah.
true. That's just a true thing. And very probably helped win the election for Donald Trump. I would argue actually the Tea Party had a lot more to do with Trump's victory than people who came in in the last year or something like that. And again, I'm not trying to denigrate anybody, because people who are doing stuff on social media is nice, but there's this tendency for people to be social media warriors. And quite frankly, that's not the same as doing a get out the vote drive or doing the hard work of political organizing. But I'm going to stop talking and I'm going to let you hurt your voice more. What say you, Christina?
Well, yeah. And, you know, this is sort of not a new thing. It's just a new platform, a new medium where we see people sometimes, you know, feel like they want to run in front of a parade. In the early days of the Tea Party movement, we certainly saw this with individuals who, you know, who wanted to establish themselves as the leaders of this movement in the very, very early days, in fact. And it was really frustrating through the years as we as a movement, the Tea Party movement, this Liberty movement, have been assigned leaders. We all know who they are at certain times and places. And Glenn Beck, you'll remember, was an early leader of the Tea Party movement, not really. Sarah Palin was an early leader of the Tea Party movement, not really. Newt Gingrich, very early leader of the Tea Party movement, not really. This movement, leaders are the individuals that make the movement up. And that's something that's so unique and so different and so expresses such an otherness when we look at the true grassroots nature of it. And so moving forward in time, as we see these other movements, see the movement expand beyond its own borders to become mainstream and large, and then in some areas specialize and factionize and all of these things that happen, that are a natural progression, by the way. We see the cycle repeat. We see little areas in social media, you know, specific specialties, and people want to run in front of that. Okay, but I think that, you know, it's a little bit fraught with danger, and you just got to wonder, is this what's best for us right now? Is this activity going to get us where we want to be? And you specifically with regards to, you know, Mike Cernovich and kind of what's happening there, I'm not really deep into watching closely what it is. I'm aware of it, but it's a bunch of sort of rhetoric. You mentioned just a moment ago about how, you know, you've got your keyboard warriors, your social media warriors, versus getting out and doing things on the ground and having meetings and talking with people and meeting with people and having coffee and discussing ideas and putting forward initiatives to accomplish politically at the local and state levels. That's what I'm much more interested in, you know, these kinds of results-oriented, long-lasting victories. And this is the record that the Tea Party movement has built over the last, you know, number of years, coming up on 8 years now. And so So this sort of slap fight that's happening in social media land with words and hashtags and everything, I'm a little concerned because good people are getting sucked into bad narratives that aren't going to help us in the long run. And one thing that this Liberty movement has done, this Tea Party movement has done, is it has advanced rock solid narratives. You know, it was the Tea Party movement that flipped the script on how much are we going to spend in government versus how much are we going to cut. How much are we going to cut is the new hotness, and that's because of us. And so, you know, it's that kind of leadership that we want to support, and this other stuff, you know, we just want to make sure that we're on solid ground, you know, before planting that flag too deep. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, absolutely. And let me also talk about something, and this is just true. So I have a lot of activities that I do during the day. I write articles for Breitbart. I research articles for Breitbart. I tweet. I do Facebook posts. I do Periscope videos. I do YouTube videos. I do YouTube videos that I edit. I have a film I'm working on. I have book projects I'm working on. I have this Blog Talk radio show. I have the Morning Stranahan Report newsletter. Okay. So I think that's a good inventory of what I do. Then I have other business interests that I do, and I have my family. But I'm just talking about, like, the work I do on journalism, okay? I can tell you the easiest two things I can do, the things that require the least effort on my part, are Twitter and Periscope. I will tell you beyond a shadow of a doubt. Doing the Blog Talk radio show, let me just explain it. Doing the Blog Talk radio show, this is relatively easy for me. But I have to prepare for the show. I have to invite guests. I've had to create these. Here, I'll play one. all these dumb little bumpers that I have to make it sound more like a radio show and to give myself time to drink. Like this one here. I'll play this one here.
Lee Stranahan, Breitbart investigative reporter, who is, well, just knows everything.
Radio Stranahan. It's all good.
That's a bumper, right? So those bumpers, I have to make those. Forgive me. They don't take long, but I have to make them. And I don't have to do that when I tweet. I don't have to do that when I do a Periscope. Periscope, I literally put the camera on, I type in a subject, and I start rambling. Okay? Twitter, I just type things that I think. They don't even need to be deeply researched. And so part of the issue here is those things that I can do are the easiest things I can do. Now, in some senses, I question whether they're the best use of my time. In fact, Twitter can be a time suck. I could do a whole topic about Twitter. But Christina, hang on one second. We have a caller on. Let's try this. Mm-hmm. 805 area code. You're on the line.
Hi. I was just going to comment on the social media warriors issue that you had brought up. One of the things that I find most rewarding, I'm an old woman. I'm over the age of retirement, and I'm on Medicare. I'm also disabled and on a fixed income. One of the things that I find really rewarding right now, since I'm not able to go out and, you know, true the vote or some of the things that I find that are happening these days that are very exciting, is to be a social media warrior. I find that my many years of observation and just putting things together over the course of a lifetime have given me a perspective that perhaps gives me a little insight into some of the things that are going on today. And one of the things that I hope to do is when I see things that obviously have been misrepresented is to take them back to the source, find out what's really going on, and put them on Facebook and on Twitter. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention that some of us do have a social media warrior after our name.
Well, I'll have Christina comment because she's got, I'm sure, a lot to say because she's one of the originators of the TCOT the top conservatives on Twitter hashtag. So Christina was using Twitter when a lot of these people had never heard of Twitter. But I'll tell you what I think about that. I love social media and I love Twitter. And my mentor, Andrew Breitbart, loved Twitter. And in fact, I got into a heated discussion with conservative activist Bill Whittle after Andrew died. And Bill Whittle did a video within a day of Andrew dying. And the video was something like, here's things I think my friend Andrew would want you to know. Now, I'm not saying he didn't know Andrew. I'm just saying in the 18 months I knew Andrew before he died, Bill Whittle's name had never come up. That's what I know. So Whittle did this video.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, so Whittle did this video, and he said, here's things I think my friend Andrew would like you to know. And one of them was, stay off Twitter. And that was never Andrew's message. Now, if that's Bill's message, if someone wants to say that Andrew spent too much time on Twitter, that's fine, but don't pretend it was his opinion. So it really bothered me, and I said something to Whittle about it that was, I think I said something along the lines of, if you keep this up, there may be two unfortunate deaths in the conservative community. Bill didn't like that. And so I apologized for it later, but he really did bother me. So I love Twitter. And one of the things, and I've been on Twitter longer than 99.9%, and that's not a made-up statistic. It's actually true. I'm the first journalist to interview a congressman on Twitter for a platform. I was the first one, months before George Stephanopoulos took credit for it, by the way, and jumped in front of my parade. So I love Twitter. I probably love Twitter too much. And Andrew thought one of the reasons he liked it was because he's ADHD. He's got attention deficit disorder. And recently, and Christina, who's known me for like close to 30 years, may be better at commenting on this than I am, I recently said to my wife, I had a conversation with my wife, I said, you know what, I think I may have attention deficit disorder. I think that's entirely possible that I've got that. I used to think it was something like other people had, and now I'm like, maybe, I don't know, maybe that's something I have. But I like Twitter for the same reason. I like Twitter because it's – so I'm not knocking people who do that. And God bless you for the work you're doing and out there talking about stuff. But
– Well, I must – oh, go ahead.
Forgive me. I was just going to say, but the thing about it is it's not the same as the real world. I don't know how else to put it. It's not the same, right?
Absolutely. I agree.
Yeah.
However, you can make a difference in the real world by doing social justice media warrior work. I do know that when I was strictly on Facebook, all of the people that were my Facebook friends were people that I actually knew in the real world. And I had signed up for Twitter, but I never used it at all, really, until probably August of 16. And in August of 16, I just wanted to widen my scope of listenership, shall we say. And so when the election was pending, I found a lot of information by a lot of very intelligent people on Twitter that I was able to share through Facebook with people that had no access to Twitter, didn't know how to use Twitter, didn't know what Twitter was. And so I feel that really, you know, that mushroomed out into the wider community and sort of, you know, gave one little portion of my United States the ability to see things that I was seeing.
Yeah, well, and like I said, I think that's great. I think it's a very good description of what a lot of people go through. And I appreciate you calling in. Thanks very much. It was a great call. We have also on the line Christina Viteri, one of the founders of the Tea Party. We're talking about social media, the impact, and how it affects real and fake news. And we'll have more on that after this extremely brief message. You're listening to Radio Stranahan.
Shining the light of truth on liberal America.
Hey, that's a bright light.
Radio Stranahan. You're listening to Radio Stranahan. Call us.
Number to call in, 619-924-0786. You're listening to Radio Stranahan with Lee Stranahan. Hey, Christina. So any thoughts? So as I mentioned, Christina Viteri, one of the founders of the Tea Party, we're talking about Mike Cernovich. We're talking about fake news. We're talking about social media. And the last caller was talking about her personal experience as a retired woman using social media. And you,
I want to key on something that she said. This is really, really important. And this is what distinguishes, in my opinion, based on she, you know, what she talked about her experiences. This is the one thing that she said that is a distinction, and it is which makes what she's doing apart from what we were talking about before when I was talking about the social media slap fight stuff. She said that the caller said that she reads these stories and goes back to the source. In other words, she checks it out. And it sounds as though that she's taking an additive attitude to her conversations in social media. She's not contributing to an echo chamber. She's instead taking, making, you know, decisions, critically thinking about the pieces of information she comes across, whether or not it's appropriate, it's proper. She checks it out before she shares it on the other platform with her Facebook friend. And that is the right way to do it. You're doing it right when you do that versus, you know, blind retweets and pile-ons and dog piles and all the rest. And so I really wanted to point that out. It was super important that she, you know, that she keyed on checking the sources, going back to the original source. Because that's really important, and that does make a difference.
Yeah, and so one of the issues that I had is on the Chicago torture story. Now, by the way, I'm gonna say this, the way I said this last half hour, forgive me, that Donald Trump would have won. Here's my point on that. Donald Trump won. There's no polling that shows that Mike Cernovich was a factor in that. That's what I'm saying. Donald Trump was the parade. And I'm not saying Mike had no impact. I'm saying there's no polling showing that. There's no nothing showing that. And had Mike not done it, other people were doing it. Again, it's tricky because I don't want to denigrate somebody who has done a bunch of good work, in my opinion. I don't want to say, well, they haven't done anything, because that's not the case, right? But as an example, here's the kind of thing I'm talking about. So, and here's what happens, and it irritates me. And the people on the right, who are largely my audience, I want you to listen to this. Stop it with this thing where a story breaks, and within an hour, you're saying the mainstream media is ignoring it. Stop it. It's irresponsible, and it's wrong. And I'm going to explain why. So in fact, this is based on something true. In fact, there are stories that the mainstream media does not cover that they ignore, and that they ignore for a long time. I'll give one simple example of a story I've worked on, the Pigford Black Farmer case. The Pigford Black Farmer scandal, multi-billion dollar scandal, the mainstream media never picked up on it. Right media had to pick up on it. Another case I worked on, the Anthony Weiner case. For days and days, Andrew Breitbart and the team at Breitbart, including myself, were denigrated by the media, who said that there was nothing to the Weiner story, and in fact, blamed Andrew Breitbart for the hacking. So there are stories that happen that the mainstream media ignores. However, and I'm seeing this more and more, there'll be a bombing, a terrorist bombing, and mainstream media doesn't immediately say it's Islamic terrorism. Before ISIS has taking credit for it, before we know who the attacker was, before anything, if they don't jump on it, people on social media have gotten the habit of, oh, I'm going to jump in and say the media is ignoring the story. No, I'm going to tell you the difference. A guy like Cernovich or anybody on Twitter, I'm not picking on him here, but anybody there has nobody over him. He can go up and tweet whatever he wants to, and he has no editor. A publication like Breitbart, and I got into this discussion with Glenn Greenwald, a guy I don't agree with politically on quite a few things, but I asked him on my Making the News interview with Glenn Greenwald. I said, now that you're a publisher with The Intercept, has that affected the way you feel about reporting a little bit? And he admitted, yeah, it does. Media, whether you like them or not, actually does need to wait for the facts to come in before they report something. They actually do. Now, in many cases, media fails to do that. And I am the first in the line to call them out. I will call out media when they ignore a story. But I don't do it in the first 2 hours. So here's what happened in the Chicago torture story. The video came out. The police were already investigating, and it was up on the news. And you can look at the timeline. Local news in Chicago was reporting it, and the police were already investigating. Then Mike Cernovich does a Periscope about it. Now Mike is claiming that the investigation happened because of him. That's a logical fallacy. Post hoc. It's claiming something happened because of something before it, when in fact it would have happened. It was happening anyway. Now they've declared it a hate crime. And he's saying it's because of Mike Cernovich who was declared a hate crime. No, it's because you have a video of a guy being tortured for a half hour that was posted on Facebook where they're saying F Donald Trump and F white people. That's a story because it was on video that, quite frankly, was going to break through no matter what. Now it's the top story on CNN. So everybody who last night was saying, oh, the mainstream media is ignoring this. But you can't say that. See, this is a very safe bet to make. You say, well, the mainstream media is ignoring it. And you win either way, right? This is what you do. You go, you immediately say the mainstream media is ignoring this. Then as soon as they start to cover it, you go, well, see, it's me. It's me. They started covering it because of me. And if they do ignore it, you can say, see, I told you so. But I would have bet dollars to donuts last night. Not that I have donuts on my current diet. But I would have bet dollars, and I don't even have dollars because I'm a journalist. But I would have bet dollars to donuts last night that this story was going to go big because it's a video. It's the same way when I saw the video of the guy getting shot in Minneapolis where his girlfriend had Facebook Lived it. That was going to be a big story. I saw that right away. It's obvious. Okay? So, Christina, you know what I'm getting at here, this idea of I think that I'm trying to say that there's a valid, right? We've all seen stories the mainstream media has failed to cover.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, it's a tricky balance. And I think on the one hand, media is in, you know, especially mainstream media, they're in a little bit of a tough spot. They got a pretty dicey record over the last, number of years, decades, let's call it, and of covering versus not covering and being busted over and over and over again for really terrible bias, for misreporting stories, for promoting fake stories. And so, you know, they've really gotten themselves into a big, bad bind. And so what happens is, to your point, it's best practice to wait until there is a result of something before you report it. And because, you know, of this amazing democratization of access to media, which is social media, much like, by the way, flashback, Video Toaster was the democratization of video technology, of video communications, big deal. And, you know.
By the way, the video, Christian, I have to stop you. The Video Toaster, for people who don't know, was a digital video device on the Amiga computer, and that's the product Christina and I were both part of marketing and promoting and everything else about 900 years ago. So that's just to explain the Video Toaster. But it was a big deal, and we've been into this media democratization thing since the 90s, and that's no joke.
Yeah, no, that's no joke, and it was the early 90s too. It's the early 90s.
Early 90s. I was writing editorials about. I mean, Christina will remember this. I had a magazine, and I was writing editorials about the future of TV, and we were saying, in the future, there'll be like 500 channels, and there'll be maybe like a golf channel and like a cooking channel. And by the way, that was when it was like a crazy, like, that was a wacky fringe prediction.
Yeah. Yeah, that was crazy talk. And by the way,
but try explaining that to my kids.
Yeah, well, let's just give a little shout-out to all our friends at CES right now. But
word, yeah.
Looking at the super cool LG 2mm 65-inch TV that is like wallpaper. But anyway, that's
four,
a different conversation.
And 4D VR, that's the new thing. It's 4D VR, which is VR, virtual reality plus motion. So that's what's happening at CES right now. My son, my 15-year-old son is up playing with his Oculus Rift, with his VR rig in his room right now. So all I will say is these kids today, Christina, they don't know how good they have it. But anyway.
I tell you. Remember Ham? Okay, we're getting off track. Okay, so what were we talking about? The democratization of communication.
Democratization of media, yeah.
Yeah, and so they're in a tough spot. You know, they have deservedly ruined their reputation, have so little credibility, but at the same time, it's important to get stories right. And they're in a fix of their own making, the mainstream media is, and so it's tough to have a lot of sympathy for them, but I feel like, you know, they're going to have to work it out. And but to that end, running in front of a parade, no matter what that parade is, you know, I made this happen. I mean, that's – who does that? I mean, I'm sorry. I don't want to be a bad guy. I don't want to point fingers necessarily. But is that really ever a good idea? Ever? I mean, really? I think that we need to let this investigation play out in at its own pace. I think at the same time – the Chicago authorities and the Illinois state authorities and federal authorities even perhaps need to take this case very seriously. This particular kidnap case is very, very serious. It is has a lot of implications, and there's a lot of contributing factors to it. We have to investigate this case to know what's going on. It played out in real time, which is different. It's not as different as it ought to be, however, unfortunately. And so we're entering sort of a little bit of a new phase of crime and punishment, in that sometimes crimes happen in real time in front of thousands, if not millions of people. And, we saw that with previous shootings. We've seen that now with this Facebook Live nonsense. And, It's just so very serious. And to treat it cavalierly, to treat this investigation and to just, you know, do and to just be, you know, slipshod with facts and with conclusions is really just not a good idea. That's just how I feel about it. We need to let this play out. At the same time, the authorities need to be extremely diligent and communicative with their findings.
We're talking to Christina Viteri, one of the founders of the Tea Party, the founders of the Teacot hashtag, and we'll be up with our final minutes with Christina right after this.
By all, first mention, Lee Stranahan, cuddly, he's my friend. Yeah, he got thrown out of the club for reporting stories that were being suppressed.
Radio Stranahan.
Do you watch the news and find yourself thinking, I can do better than this? If you know how bad the mainstream media is and you want to make media that's better than they are, I started Citizen Journalism School just for you. CitizenJournalismSchool.com will give you the information and allow you to sign up for the free mailing list and get our free course, Building Your Own Media Empire. But I want to tell you about a program that is for people who are serious about a career in journalism. If you really want to make a difference, we have a program called the Citizen Journalism School Mentorship Program, where you work directly with me, one-on-one and in small group settings. And the best part is, it's a fraction of the cost of journalism school. Go to citizenjournalismschool.com right now to get more information. Citizenjournalismschool.com.
This is Lee Stranahan. You're listening to Radio Stranahan, 40 minutes past the hour. On the line right now, Christina Viteri, one of the founders of the Tea Party and of the Teacot hashtag. We're talking about social media news and really about journalistic responsibility. You know, I played the ad for Citizen Journalism School since I am my own sponsor. But Christine, you've known me a long time, so you know I love teaching. You know, I taught when we talked about the video toaster. That was what I did back in the day. And one of the reasons I'm starting citizen journalism school is because I see people making these errors in I'm really very passionate about getting journalism right. And part of it is, for me, it's personal, which is Andrew Breitbart had a mission and a vision. He was the one who really advocated the idea of citizen journalism. He's the one where I heard talking about it all the time. And it was specifically connected, and you can speak to this, how big an advocate for the Tea Party, how important was he? Just be honest, Chris. You don't have to, because Andrew and I were friends, but you don't have to, you can just be straight. How important do you think, you talked about Glenn Beck and the Tea Party, how important was Andrew Breitbart in the Tea Party, in your opinion, in helping get the message out when the Tea Party was getting going?
He was critically important. He was critically important because he showed up. You know, I talk about this a lot. The first rule of winning is showing up, because you can't win if you don't show. And the thing about Andrew, and you knew him way a lot better than I did, but I had the pleasure of knowing him as well and had, you know, conversations as he drove around L.A., and that was a challenge in and of itself. But it was the reason Andrew was such an important ally to the Tea Party movement was because he showed up. And he showed up on our behalf in the media. He showed up to events that he was invited to. He showed up with the, you know, answers to questions that we had. He showed people how to do things. And he was the man that we needed at the time that we needed him, where we needed him. And all of those things were really, really important in the beginning.
Let me contrast him with Glenn Beck for a second here. And when I say be honest, I really do want you to be honest. Because I have a personal dog in this hunt a little bit. But I'm going to contrast Andrew Breitbart and Glenn Beck. What I think I saw happening with Glenn Beck was he used the Tea Party wave, and then he jumped in front of it and created these big events that made the Tea Party about him, effectively. And he did it in a typical Glenn Beck humble brag kind of way. Oh, you know, this is not about me, he said, with giant posters of him or whatever. And but am I off there? Because I kind of, the reason I'm bringing it up is I kind of see a parallel between what's going on then and what's going on now with this Trump thing and the people on social media.
Okay, well, the difference was between, you know, Andrew Breitbart. I mean, there's a whole lot of difference, but in a nutshell, Andrew Breitbart was there for us in a substantial way to build towards a result, a real world result and lasting victory. Glenn Beck, in contrast, appeared to use the Tea Party as a platform to promote Glenn Beck and his personal products and initiatives. And Glenn Beck, however, to say Glenn Beck did nothing for the Tea Party is inaccurate. That's not
true. Yeah, I wouldn't say that either. Yeah, I wouldn't say that either.
There was a distinctive I'm the boss and you do what I say dynamic with Glenn Beck. That's how you don't have a choice. Glenn Beck decides who comes on to talk about your group when you're dealing with Glenn Beck. And that's a beef that is tough for me to let go. That was never ever the case with Breitbart or anybody in the Breitbart organization, you know, whether you're talking about then or now or any time in between. Breitbart as a platform, Breitbart as the man, approached people as their peers. How can I help you accomplish? And that's the difference between the two. And I hope that makes sense to everybody.
Well, it makes sense to me too. I mean, people, I know this because I walked around conventions a lot with Andrew. I would tag along with Andrew at conventions. And you know this, and anybody who was at CPAC or any of those events knows you could walk up to Andrew Breitbart. He had no security. He had no guards. He had no barriers. You could just talk to him. You could give him your phone number. And like I say, when Andrew Breitbart was out defending the Tea Party on the Shirley Sherrod story, which was about defending the Tea Party, it wasn't about Sherrod, that's when Glenn Beck threw him under the bus. And I see these people, in a sense, as rudderless. A guy like Glenn Beck, I said this, who was I talking to? Oh, yeah, I was talking to the podcast I did with Michael Kelly. I compared Glenn Beck to Robin Williams, who Robin Williams, obviously a brilliant comedian, very funny, but always had this undertone of desperateness about him. Like, you could tell Robin Williams really needed you to like him. There was this manic quality. I mean, that was part of the genius of his comedy. I'm not knocking Robin Williams, but I'm saying when I heard he committed suicide, I thought it was horrible and tragic, but I wasn't shocked. I don't know how else to put it. I wasn't like, well, where did that come from? I was like, yeah, there was a certain darkness that he had that I think came out. And Beck's got that same, again, I'm not saying Beck's going to kill himself. I'm saying that Beck's got that a certain desperate performer quality that I see. And I think it helps. At the time, Glenn Beck had a way bigger platform than Andrew Breitbart. At the time, Glenn Beck had a way bigger platform. So if the scorecard you're using to judge these things is popularity, Beck was winning. But I think Andrew, clearly, given the election results, Andrew Breitbart, even in death, had a bigger impact than Glenn Beck has on the American politics. So, Christine, in the final couple minutes we have here, what are your thoughts on that?
Absolutely, yeah, that's correct. The difference, you know, it goes to the saying, you know, you give a man a fish, you teach a man to fish. You know, I feel like too often, Glenn Beck was in the fish giving business, whereas Andrew Breitbart taught people how to fish. He taught people how to deal with media, how to build their organizations, how to handle messaging. And these were bedrock ideas that we were able to take our own principles and apply these techniques and ideas and be successful with lasting victories and results. Simple as that.
And
having a very temporal, you know, moment on a radio show that falls down the memory hole in 20 minutes, which is what happened.
That's right. Yeah. And that's why it's very difficult for the work that I try to do. I mean, I'm trying to paint big pictures on a medium, you know, doing news stories, and I'm trying to connect big dots. And that's why I keep coming back to the same stories a lot of times. Anyway, Christine, we only have about a minute left, but thanks very much for coming on. I appreciate you coming on when you're not feeling well. Hey, you're going to be on David Webb's show tonight?
Yes.
So Christina is
I'll
a...
Yeah,
go ahead. Here's my point. If it's Thursday, it must be Christina.
Yes.
Right?
That's right. Yes, tonight on the David Webb show on SiriusXM, channel 125, tune in. It's the best show on SiriusXM. It's fantastic. And being with David and talking about the news of the day. It's going to be great.
And the best part, and it's the David Webb show on Sirius Satellite Radio 125. By the way, I might beg to say that the Breitbart news shows are pretty darn good themselves. And I'm also a fan of Andrew Wilkow, by the way. But I love David. I wouldn't argue too much there. But the best part about tonight is if you listen to Sirius Satellite Radio with Christina Viteri on the David Webb show, you will be unable to tell who is who by listening to their voices. Their voices tonight will be identical on the David Webb show. That's Christina. Love you, Chris. Talk to you later, everybody. Till tomorrow, I'm Lee Stranahan.